Welcome back to Don't Cut a Book Club. My name is Luke.
My name is Dan.
We're back. We're on a roll now, I think, now that we've been back for two episodes.
Officially, it's a tradition now. We've done it twice.
So today we are continuing into Son of a Lich. Mm-hmm. We're two-thirds of the way through, up to chapter 23. And it's my turn to get us warmed up today, Dan.
Okay, yeah. Let's go for it, Luke.
So as you know that I'm a big sports lover. I'm a sports guy.
You're a sports nut. We know.
Watching them on the telly. And here in the US, summertime usually downtime for sports, but soccer's on.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah.
So this is my last chance to do this warm up. Now stop me if I've done it before, because that's, I think, what we have to say at all times now.
Yeah, for sure.
But so the finals of the Euro Cup and the Copa America were this past week, and I think from a U.S. perspective, watching soccer is kind of a culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, okay, let me first say, I don't want this to be any kind of value judgment.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that I'm not used to the culture of soccer.
Okay.
And I don't mean that it's worse. Okay.
Yeah.
Let me clarify that.
Fair.
But for those that aren't familiar with, like, U.S. sports, you are, like, sportsmanship is, like, drilled into us to an insane degree, I think. In comparison to when I watch soccer.
Ooh, this is interesting. Say more, because
do you have this? Okay, so for one thing, like, all soccer games.
Yeah.
Professional. I'll say professional, because I'm not sure about, like, college or anything like that.
Yeah.
But at all times, at any scenario, the players are just, like, assholes to each other. And, like, do little annoying things, like they kick the ball away when it's out of bounds, they waste time, they, like, do all that they can do to get a foul call.
Yeah.
Constantly.
Yeah.
To a degree that's, like, shocking to me.
Oh, interesting.
Do you have this? Are you not familiar with this?
So it doesn't feel different to me from, like, so here's what I'm thinking of, right? Because when I'm watching soccer, if one team is in the lead, especially, they are running down the clock as much as possible, because the clock doesn't stop until halftime. Like, there's no clock stoppage. So the more you can delay if you're up, the more likely you're going to win. This to me just feels like how the game is structured. Like, it is inevitable.
Okay. But I want to distinguish between playing, like passing it around the back in gameplay to waste time, and like when the ball goes out of bounds, kicking it farther away from the other player so that they have to waste time going to get it, or like faking injuries and like rolling on the ground for like 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
I get that the, like, structure of the fact that the clock doesn't roll, like, comes into play, because in like football or basketball, it does. The clock does stop, so there's no reason to do this.
Yeah.
But like, those kinds of, like, basketball, for example.
Yeah, this is the one
you get a technical foul if you waste time, and it's, like, strict.
Well, okay, but here's the thing. I think football and basketball are some of the most boring sports to watch at the ends of the games. At the ends of the game specifically. Because every team is just trying to, like, foul. Especially, like, I don't know.
This
strategy
is basketball, to be clear.
What?
This is basketball more so than
football. Sure. So basketball, the strategy at the end of the game is just, like, so boring to me. Like, it's not even... It is so different from the rest of the game that I'm like, why are we watching this? It's just people getting fouled and then taking free throws for the last minute of the game, which has been extended to, like, 5 minutes for this like boring component. And it feels like I feel like you could watch that and be like, this is poor sportsmanship. They shouldn't be fouling each other left and right. They should be just playing the game, because that's like what the game is. And having them do all these fouls and try and get all these fouls is just like kind of rude in a way. Like I equate the two, because I'm like, look, if you can get away with it, you're trying to win this game. If it's like within the bounds of the rules, you're a professional. You know what those limits are. You're going to do what you can to like win the game. And if it's in the bounds, like do it. So like,
okay.
To that extent, I disagree. I also think there's a lot of times in like football where people get really angry and like there's a lot of what's it called? Where you grab someone's jersey, and I feel like they're always doing like little stuff to get an advantage. I don't think soccer is actually that unique in the sportsmanship.
I do appreciate you rebutting me a little bit, but I'm standing strong.
Apologies from Luke. Like,
because also they're just like super aggressive to the ref as well,
mm-hmm.
in ways that I'm not used to.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
where,
oh, but I'm just thinking about all those sideline shots of the coaches screaming their faces off at the ref in football and basketball games.
Oh, this is actually an interesting distinction, because the coaches are weirdly allowed to do this.
Yeah.
And
like, yeah, the players don't really do that often. Sometimes at a basketball game, the players will go off at the ref.
Well, because like if the players talk back to the ref in like aggressive ways, like you're allowed to talk to the ref.
Yeah.
But if you do it in like aggressive ways, you get a technical. In football, if you touch the ref, they can kick you out of the game.
Yeah,
like if you ever touch them, which is kind of crazy.
Well, it's because the ref is like a normal person in a field of giants, and so like you have to have there is no tolerance for any physical contact, because it could break you in half instantly. So
true. I don't know. I think it feels different to me.
Here,
and also, like, there's so much diving and faking of fouls.
So this is the thing that I think is different, is there is a component to soccer that is in interpretive dance, let's say, or improv, to get the... And it doesn't feel like it ever really changes the call. Like, it feels like a lot of the diving that happens doesn't really have an impact on the call. Maybe it does, because they do it. But I don't know. It feels like it does feel theatrical. It feels a lot more theatrical in its injury portrayal than any other American, like any American sport.
Yeah. And again, I can't tell if it's just like a different sport, so that I just don't watch as much.
Yeah.
And there's nothing actually that different about it, or if there actually is. Because like it you are getting like kicked in the leg constantly when you're playing soccer.
And this is the thing
but, like,
I think about.
Also,
yeah.
they fall down and do like 10 rolls, and then like after a minute they get up and run around, and it's like, ah.
Well, now I think that there might be a few answers to this. One is it could just be like it's not that common. We just like see and hear about it when it does happen. But also, yeah, maybe it does really hurt though, and they're just good at shaking it off, you know? We don't know.
maybe it's the exact opposite.
Yeah, maybe
they're actually like, so tough.
Yeah, they're like, ah, wow, I really broke my ankle there, but I gotta roll around for a little and then I can get up and keep going. But I do think the component where, because the clock doesn't stop during injury, right?
No.
So yeah.
Okay, last thing. Actually,
yeah,
is that like so? The clock doesn't ever stop, right?
Yes.
But the ref is supposed to be keeping track.
Yes. So at the end, they do extra time
and adds it on. But it's like it's it's never the correct amount. It's like, okay, why even have it? What, like, because I know it was more than this.
Yeah.
And then like they'll add like 5 minutes, and the winning team will waste three of them when it's out of bounds, and they're just like hanging out.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, if this, you have to add another three now. No, you can't. because they've turned 5 minutes into two.
It's a paradox where you're always like getting halfway to the distance, but you never actually get there because you keep having to add time on.
I would double the time that they waste, honestly, if it was clear that they were wasting time.
But the like added time at the end also makes it a little more exciting though, right? Because you know when you hit 90, when you get close to 90, you're gonna be like, that's not the end. They still have a chance. Like they've still got 2 minutes.
I actually do love the kind of subjective nature of the refereeing in here, which I think I may have talked about a little bit. I do like it. I want them to add more time, to add the correct amount of time instead of like clearly not enough.
Yeah, but like people have to go home at some point, Luke.
True.
So
true. Fair. But anyway, I'm loving it. I still love watching soccer. It's the beautiful game for a reason, Dan.
Mm. Olympics. The Olympos are coming up, Luke. We're gonna get a lot of great soccer this summer.
I love the Olympics.
I know, me too. Oh, let's get those Olympos going.
I'm sure we'll have some warm-ups or talk related to those in the next month or so. But let's get to the book, I reckon.
Yeah. Son of a Lich, okay. Up to chapter 23.
That's right.
And
bad news that we've split the party.
Yeah, which I mean was gonna happen, right? It had to.
So
it's one of those. That guy's rules.
Right. I have now played Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh yeah,
a couple times.
Uh huh.
But not enough. But I've never split the party. I don't think. I don't think we ever split the party.
It's a bad idea. Doesn't go well.
Because I've heard it's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. So,
but I'm jumping ahead.
Yeah. Before we get there, I want to start by talking about that first city that the necromantic army takes over. The one where people are like volunteering to join them. The head of marketing, I think it's the head of marketing. If not, then it's this like, what's his name? Like Tyrion guy? Tyrion?
Mm-hmm. He was like our guard captain previously.
Yeah, the knight commander. He said that it was a 7% turnover rate. Like 7% of the existing guards joined their army voluntarily. That sounded low for the scene that we got in like behind the scenes. And it makes me wonder, were they not able to turn them all? And so were some of these guys just like killing themselves and then not getting turned into undead? You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean.
He's like, yeah, we got a 7% transformation rate, which is pretty good. We would have gotten much higher, but a lot of them... their bodies were just too mangled. Like they jumped from really high things and there was just nothing for us to work with there.
So that was one that I noticed because a couple of them jumped from the wall and like in the text you hear like a splat, I think.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well that seems like we're done. I think.
Like, I feel like they would have to have something to work with, guys.
At the very least, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage in your next life.
Right. You're going to be like a blob. They're going to make you like a flesh blob or something. And that's at the bottom of the hierarchy.
Very close to the bottom. Or you're like a skelly, but all of your bones are broken, which is not great.
It's pretty bad.
The other option that I was thinking that we hadn't considered is you do a little volunteer action, but then you run.
What?
Right? Like, so... I'm assuming they have a little processing tent.
They've got a line of you're waiting in a line filling out a form.
Right.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And if I'm a guard in a city and I know that it's going to fall,
yeah.
And my options are either stay to protect the city and die or volunteer to be turned to an undead. Third option, volunteer to turn into an undead but make a break for it.
What? This is an interesting option, Luke, because I feel like you're getting the worst of both worlds if you do this.
Okay.
Because if you stay, you're not a deserter, and so you get to keep your honor, right? Although I think that yes. scene does a pretty good job of kind of discrediting the whole honor thing, because like everybody's gone. You're
just protecting, I don't think there's a ton of honor in this book.
You're protecting property at that point, and like, get out of there. What are you doing? And I think the other problem there is you're not getting away, Luke. How do you think you're getting away?
They're slow. They're zombies and skellies.
They're not all zombies and skellies. There's horrifying hell beasts and vampires and ghouls and goblins. Okay, there's no goblins, but there's like so many horrific things here. And I guarantee they're like lining the queue, being like, all right, mm-hmm. keep going. Because of course everyone's going to get in the queue and be like, oh, I have to die? Oh, I really don't want to do that. I want to go. I'm going to go. I'm rethinking this.
Right. I don't know. I'm just trying to see why our numbers are so low. Because I agree with you that it seemed like it was much more.
I wonder if their data analytics team is not very good. Like maybe it is. Okay. It is much higher, but they've got marketing like kind of figured out, and maybe this data analytics team was about the same level as the previous marketing team, where they just didn't really know what they were doing, and they just haven't found their new head person to really transform the department.
Right. This is a good point. So they're over also here. You don't really know the denominator.
Right. Right. Our data analytics team are like counting heads on the wall, and they're like double counting many, many times because they're just like forgetting. Well, did I count that one? I don't remember. Let's count him.
They're counting, and then they're probably extrapolating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Who knows if that extrapolation is correct? It's a mess. It's probably higher, and they're putting a low. They're trying to play it safe with the number.
Ooh, they're doing the lower bounds of our error to be like, it's definitely above 7. But 7 seems low. I would be disappointed with those numbers.
I would too. I would too. But if you're looking at 0% from the last one.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Then it's all about growth, Dan.
That's true. We do have a growth mindset here.
Okay. Was it this battle where our heroes fight them, or was this a later one?
This is the next battle where they're at High Watch, I think.
Okay. Okay. I'm not gonna get there yet then.
Okay.
I am going to go to where they steal the staff.
Yes, they do their heist.
A little heist. They use your favorite, some little tricky things.
Amazing.
Some little gadgets.
I love it.
They have one gadget that goes and makes a distraction. And here's my note. Here's my note to guards. If you have a bunch of guards, you got to know that the first thing is a distraction.
Well, right? Do you though?
I mean, okay. You don't have to assume that the first thing is a distraction, but you have to guess. You have to have someone being like, that could be a distraction.
Right, right. You've got to account for it and not commit everyone to that distraction.
You can't commit to, especially if you're guarding super valuable mm-hmm. and dangerous artifacts.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, and also, on a side note, did they need a distraction?
I don't think so. I was trying to understand why the distraction was necessary, because they go into a time bubble. So, like, who cares if everyone's staring at you when you go into your time bubble? I guess their original plan is they were going to try and sneak out with it. And so, like, in that case, you don't want everybody staring at you while you go into your little time bubble.
Right.
But, yeah, they probably should have asked a little bit more how this time bubble worked, too. Because it sounded like they were surprised that things maintained momentum.
Well, they were in a hurry, to be fair.
Yeah, but, like, I feel like you tell them that if you're giving them this cool time bubble thing and you're like, hey, look, if you need a quick getaway, here's all you got to do. Just run really fast.
I agree. I also think that we can bump sales up a little bit if we are like, this actually is the greatest weapon known to man.
Yeah. Yeah, just go into this bubble and shoot arrows at everybody who you don't like, and they become like missiles. They become terrifying.
You could conquer the world easily.
Easily, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Even, okay, it's the problem with this too is it's even something to where like a magic, like the magic nullifying rune that the bard has, it wouldn't even work on this. Because because you wouldn't be able to do it quick enough. Like, everything would be over before you could get out your cool counter magic spell. Because it's time.
Yeah.
It's so powerful, guys. And I get that, like, it's really highly regulated in this world, I guess.
Maybe.
But like not that highly regulated, because he just gave it to these people. He was like, here, go have fun.
So. Yeah, I don't know. It's a pretty good the thing is, they've probably got tons of things like this.
Yeah, definitely. They're not giving their one and only time bomb.
Right. I mean, like, okay, not only do they have multiple time bomb thingies, but also like They're not the whatever time bomb emporium.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's not like their flagship product.
Yeah. That's right.
I walking around in there, it's like, you guys should be more heavily regulated now that I think about this.
Luke, this is part of the magic for me. When I'm in a workshop scene and they're giving cool gadgets to people, the magic is, what else do they have in this wonderful place? It's got to be so many cool gizmos. You know what I mean? Like, that's part of the wonder of it, is they're just like giving you some stuff, but they're not telling you everything in there, and you're like, oh, what else is in there though? I want to know.
Yeah. This like begs the question for me. So the reason that they went to these people is to steal, or to find a way to steal a staff, to then be able to use the staff to stop the lich.
Yes.
And like, I don't know. I feel like it's just get some of their things.
You're saying cut out the middleman, go right to the source.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, what do you got for stopping like undead armies?
Yeah. They've got stuff.
Yeah, they've got,
even if it's not specialized for undead, it's like, okay, I think we can do it. If you've got these time bombs, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. Luke, maybe it's cheaper though to do this. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
Like,
maybe.
It's cheaper to steal a priceless artifact than pay the exorbitant fees from this company. Prices keep going up, and Luke, so do corporate profits. So this somewhere inflation's gotta stop.
I know.
Maybe that's what our team is doing.
Trying to counter inflation.
Totally. Yeah. Reduce spending.
Got to.
Yeah. Yeah. Can we jump ahead to our second battle?
Yeah.
The second undead battle where they're going after High Watch. And there's the fight with the necromancer with Ditar Ermion.
Mm-hmm.
I love the anagram. I love the anagram for the sole reason that there's no way anyone would put it together. Like, usually when you do an anagram, for example, the one that this is obviously making fun of is the Tom Riddle one.
Mm-hmm. The Harry Potter one.
Yeah. But the fact that, like, the anagram spells out it's Ditar Ermion and not just, like, Ditar Ermion is so funny, because clearly he was like, I can't really get a good one with just my name. I've got to have some more letters in there. And he thought it was just like so clever. He's like, haha, they never guessed it was me. And I just did a cool anagram. And it was like, yeah, dude, because you added some other letters. You added some other stuff in there.
I know. I mean, it is a perfect, like, a perfect way to make fun of the Harry Potter one.
Yeah. It's really
because
good.
The Harry Potter one is I am Lord Voldemort.
Correct, yeah.
Which is like, that's, you're cheating.
Right, right. Because you could get a bunch of other anagrams from that are like totally innocuous stuff, right? It's not like that's the only thing you can make from those letters. Come on. Come on, guys.
I'm into it. I'm into all the presentation. I know I said this last time. But it's key. It's what makes a good villain.
It is key. I also love that he's committed to the gnomish organ, bringing this gnomish organ around with him everywhere and having like an epic soundtrack to all of his fights. Big into that.
Yeah. And I also think that like the fact it's not just the sound of the gnomish organ that makes it good. It's that he's going through the effort to bring the actual gnomish organ itself.
Exactly.
Rather than a recording.
This will never get turned into a movie, but I think it would make such a good movie. As I've been reading this, I've just been like, man, this would be such a funny like gag in a movie, like to see this. And to like bring the soundtrack into the real film. There's a word for that in film studies. I don't remember what it's called, but it's where the like movie music is actually in the scene. But yeah, I just think, man, this would make a great movie.
It would. It keeps reminding me of Megamind.
I never saw that.
Oh, great movie.
Is that a good one? Maybe I'll watch it.
It's good. It's animated.
Yeah. Okay, wait. So, speaking of our lich, Jin is kind of pissed off at his pops because he's killed a lot of people to get to where he's at.
And his dog.
Okay, and the dog, which, okay, come on. We can't do that.
Kind of killed.
Yeah, but he brought him back, so. Is killing people that bad in this universe? On Ark, is killing people that bad? Because, obviously, in our world, murder is bad. Killing people's bad because they die and they don't come back, and, you know.
That's our take.
But here, they literally ran a marketing campaign that was like, hey, join us voluntarily. And a significant number of people were like, yeah, okay. So,
on the assumptions that they're being turned into undead.
Correct. But that's what a lich is doing, right?
Right.
Now, of course, I will say, it's sort of like slavery, right? Because he's turning them into undead that are then bent to his will to do what he wants them to do. So, like,
right.
It's not great. It's not a good thing that you're doing to people.
I'm certainly worse than if it wasn't happening.
Wait. It's what's worse?
I think being turned into an undead is better than like not being in the situation at all.
Oh, than just being dead. Than just being dead.
No. Being turned into undead.
Yes.
Is worse.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's worse than not.
Did I say better? Is worse than just like living your life.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
a
yeah.
Person.
Well, okay. I will say though, they still convince people to do it.
Yeah, but that's because they're gonna die without being.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I think they're just going to die a less painful death. Is that what it is?
Maybe. Yeah, that's right. They're not going to get eaten alive. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that's fair. But I'm still, obviously it's bad. Is it not as bad, though, as killing people in our world? Is it maybe just a little better? Because, you know, hey, fix that knee problem for you, though. So, you know, bright side, silver lining, and all that.
Silver lining, yes. That's key and honestly very important for my constituency.
Mm-hmm.
So it's better.
Also, basically a confirmation
it's a low bar.
Of like an afterlife, right?
Well, they already have that.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. It feels like murder in like books and things that have like a confirmed afterlife is not nearly as bad for some reason as murder in our world. Do you know what I mean?
This Yeah, I mean, I do know what you mean. If there's a confirmed afterlife and like maybe it's nice.
Yeah, or at least something. It's not like, yeah, at least something. You know what? I feel like I'm coming across as like pro-murder. I'm not. I want to clarify. Definitely not pro-murder. I'm just saying, if you know that there's something after, and everybody knows there's like empirical evidence that like, yeah, there is an extra thing after this one. There's an epilogue to this whole deal.
Right.
I feel like it's not as bad if you're sending people to said epilogue sooner.
Yes. I think that this is true. It's very interesting, actually.
This actually
then
gets...
it's like, well, what? This is tough.
This actually gets at a somewhat horrifying question that's related to our world and what people in our world believe about what happens to themselves after they die that I don't really want to get into on the pod because yeah, I don't think it's
that's beyond us.
It's probably. It's an us topic, but
yeah.
Anyway.
Okay, I think I'm here with you where, you know, could be worse. Murder in this world where there's an afterlife. I don't know if we heard much about the afterlife aside from the undead version.
Not really. No. We know that there are gods that like do stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it's nice. It depends on if it's nice.
Right. Right. But even if it's not that nice. Yeah, okay. I guess if it's even slightly better than average.
Yeah.
Then like
then it's fine. Then it's all good.
Yeah. Then do whatever you want, I guess.
That's why heroing is such a fine profession because they're like willing to risk death.
Right.
Because it's like, yeah, it's not a big deal.
They're not even that brave though, so.
True. Somewhat related to death. I want to talk about the assassins for a second.
Mm-hmm.
So we get a few scenes with them because they keep struggling to find and kill Gorm and our squad. Trying to kill Gorm and our squad. There we go. And like they keep getting the talking to where they're like, basically comes down to in the assassin profession, if you don't succeed, you have to be killed.
Yes.
Why would I do the assassin? Why would I be an assassin?
Love of the game.
Just love of the game?
And they're all so badass, right?
I think, okay, my take, and I know I'm always proposing this.
Yeah.
Gotta unionize.
Oh my God. We actually have already seen a union in this world, which is great. We love to see it.
No, I know. But in this case, this is why people make assassins guilds, right?
This is true.
That's why it's always a guild.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Can't be a lone wolf assassin.
If you have assassins on contract, if you have just like a bunch of contractors as assassins, hey, sorry, you're not safe after you complete the assassination. You are even more in danger because, yeah, you know what's even better than one witness? No witnesses. So you have to always be like the best assassin to survive long as an assassin.
I've never understood. It's very common for there to be like a group of assassins who are all hired separately.
Yes. Yes.
It's like, no, this makes no sense. But then, the counterpoint of that is like, you need a guild. That's it.
Yes. And yes.
If it's an assassin situation, if you want multiple assassins, it needs to be guild related.
Yes. Maybe they could all follow a certain code, like a creed, perhaps. These assassins could have some sort of creed.
That's right.
That they all follow.
They could be throughout the historical world.
Yeah.
In different places.
Jumping on stuff, maybe.
Jumping on, climbing walls mostly.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's getting cool. Good vantage points. Jumping into hay bales from the top of buildings.
All right. They get it, Luke. They get it.
That's the best part.
I know. Okay, it's anyway. So good. So one more thing, speaking of death, since we're on it. we had this question answered later, which I appreciated, so I'm not going to dwell on this. But when we betray the king and we kill him and we drop him off of our bird.
Mm-hmm. We being Johan.
Johan, yeah. Is Johan not concerned that the king's going to get turned into a ghoul or a ghost or something and just be like, yeah, Johan killed me, so...
Well, I mean, what we learn later is apparently they can't turn him because he's been killed by a paladin.
That feels like a cheat code. Like, anything a paladin kills, you can't... It feels like a cheat code for, like, horrific murder. Like, that happened here. Like, it feels like the perfect cheat code for, like, assassination. Do you know what I mean? Because the way... Here's the perfect way to do a trial in this world. Hey, you got murdered. We're gonna just bring you back and then ask you who did it. And you can just point to them.
Right.
But paladins are going around killing people and they're like, well, he must have been killed by a paladin because I can't bring him back.
Yeah. I mean, okay, but then it's like, well, there can't be that many paladins, right?
Sure, so it does narrow things down a little bit. I guess. Yeah. It just...
Do you think it's just... Does... In a world where necromancy is not, like, the worst thing, is, like, semi-normal?
Well, this... It's not. I mean, it is seen as, like, a really terrible thing in this world, right?
Yes.
No one else is doing it.
Right. Okay. Well, okay. So this maybe is not super relevant for this world, but just all murder investigations are this.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like you're missing an opportunity here. You don't need to enslave these undead. You can just ask them for information. You could just be like, hey, tell me about that cool event you saw. I want to write it down for my history book. And then you can go back to your chilling.
That's right.
Right? Like, let him go. Let him...
Slippery slope argument.
Okay. Damn. What do you mean?
If you want people to do things for you, this is how all necromancy gets bad, because then it's like, okay, well, I'm just gonna get some free labor here.
Yeah, like, hey, I could also use you to I could use a little sweep. My house is a little dirty, if you wouldn't mind just sweeping up before you go. You're dead anyway, you don't care.
Just real quick.
And I'm like, oh, I've got a lot of dishes in the sink. Oh, it'd be really nice. I don't really want to work my fingers to the bone, but considering that your fingers are already just bone, would you mind?
That's right. So that's what happens to all necromancers. They start off with the best of intentions, as we know.
That's fair. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. I also have a little small note about the assassins real quick.
Sure. Yeah.
Who's out here, like, get me the pirate assassin? What? Who? This guy said his publicist said he needed a brand?
Yeah.
Sorry. What? I don't want... If I'm looking for an assassin, I'm not like, yeah, get me one that would entertain my children at their birthday party. I'm like, get me the best one. Not, like, the pirate one. Do you know what I mean? Why is his brand not, like, the best assassin, or, like, a really good assassin at knives or poison? Or he's a pirate assassin? What is that? That's not a good...
Yeah.
That's not a good brand.
The only time when you want to go, like, when you want that kind of branding as your assassin is, like, if you're really trying to corner the market on, like, themed assassins. Or what? Themed assassinations.
Why? Who is requesting,
like,
that?
Hey, if for some reason the guy that I want murdered is really afraid of pirates, or if it would be, like, really ironic, you know?
Why wouldn't you just hire pirates then? Like, pirates already kill people, right?
On the seas, though. On the high seas.
But I think that's part of why this guy is horrible, is this isn't actually a pirate, right? This is a person cosplaying a pirate.
Right.
So, like, they can't even do pirate stuff. They just talk like a pirate.
Yeah, it's bad branding. I mean, great dodgeball reference, though.
Sure. Is this a dodgeball reference? I didn't pick up on that.
I don't know. I'm only now thinking about it. But okay.
All right.
It could be.
Anyway, that's, I just think that it's very funny, but also like, this is, you have a bad publicist, my guy.
Bad publicist. Listen, some are better than others.
Yeah.
True. You don't have to take their advice, though.
True.
Okay. I have a couple notes back at the Capitol.
Yeah, let's go.
And the first one is maybe somewhat small, where we make fun of the Queen a lot for eating too many little cakes, right?
And by we don't. Luke and Dan do not.
Luke and Dan do not, but the book does. And I just want to say, give me all the tea cakes.
Yeah, Luke and Dan famously loves donuts and will eat a dozen by himself. So
the first scene we get with her is with her baker.
Yep.
And she's like, what kind of cakes are these? And she says something that sounds amazing.
Raspberry mint. Lemon raspberry mint, I believe.
Yes.
Give me a tray of those.
Actually, pretty close to the flavor of my wedding cake. I think we went like raspberry lemon, but not mint.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, actually, when they said raspberry mint, I was like, oh, almost. I don't know if the mint's going to work with that.
I don't know about the mint, but regardless, I'll take them all.
Yeah, no question. Like, yeah.
I might mix them up. Maybe I'm not going maybe I'm not going cakes for everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I feel like I would want to have a variety. I wouldn't want to eat all the same one at once. I'd be like, I want one of those and then one of those and then finish with another one of those. And then like, I'm mixing up don't get me wrong. I'm eating all of them. Just probably not in
this is why they're tea cakes, because they're small.
Exactly. Yeah. So you can have several. I'm mixing and matching. Yeah, I don't know if... Now, Luke, I will say, we don't know if this was a Joey Chestnut-esque feat of gastronomy, because we don't know the quantity of tea cakes. They never tell us. They just say that it's a tray full. These trays, I mean, they're in a palace.
Right.
These could be world record levels of tea cake consumption that we're witnessing.
People could be making these comments in awe and worship
yes,
of her.
Exactly.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, I was also on board. Give me all the tea cakes.
All the tea cakes. Okay. And then I want to talk about our friend Poldo, I think is his name.
We need to talk about Poldo, yeah.
And so where are we at with him? Do we like him?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
My note was going to be like, you're still not really a good person.
This is exactly my note. Poldo is not actually a good guy. Like you brought it up, Luke, so I'll let you get started on this. But
I mean, like he comments kind of on it.
Yeah.
Where he's still like investing in, or actually he originally made his fortune on like, I forget the details of the economy.
Yeah.
But essentially, like, putting out quests to kill Shadowkin, I think is the term that they use.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so the fact that he's now, like, housing a large amount of them is good, but, like, he's using the money from killing a bunch of them.
Correct.
For this. And is continuing to make money on something similar.
Yes. Exactly.
That's like more scammy than murdery, though.
It's sort of like, I don't know.
Kind of a slumlord now?
It feels like more despicable in some ways because he is like perpetuating a system that positions these creatures to have to rely on his charity. And so he's like putting himself in a position to have all this power over these Shadowkin and then like gets to be portrayed as a nice guy because he's being somewhat charitable to them when he put them in that position.
Let me say he didn't start out trying to do this.
No.
Right. I don't think he went out and was like, let me put myself in a position over these people.
Right.
but it's where we are.
Right.
And we're also doing a little poverty concentration.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can't put them all in the same building.
Yeah, but Luke, this is how you gentrify, is you put them all in one building, you lower the property values of the adjacent buildings, and then you buy those up too, and then you kick out the existing tenants, you put in a little coffee shop, and then prices go way up. This is just economics, baby. Yeah.
That's right. That's totally how gentrification happens.
Uh-huh. I will say, for Poldo's credit, I think there's a bit of a transformation happening with him. So I think he is maybe coming to grips with his role in this system.
I think that's fair.
I still don't think his charity is a good thing. Like, I still don't think that he is a good guy because he is being charitable. Like, I think he needs to go a step beyond to be like, what can I do that makes this equitable? What can I do that is like, they no longer rely on my charity anymore because they can sort of exist independent of me. They don't need me anymore.
Right. And this isn't even going into the like financial, I don't think it's fraud, but like thing.
Well, yeah, the like CTOs that he made, whatever they were called.
Right.
Yeah. I will say, Luke, harkening back to our warm-up, it's in the rules. It's not against the rules, so he was just playing the
game. On the side of the banks.
I'm just saying, regulate him if you don't want him to do this kind of stuff.
Regulate him. Oh, man. There we go. This is another thing where you said last episode, I don't know enough about the financial crisis of 2008 to really talk in detail about it.
But it seems relevant to what's happening here.
It does. It does. Enron? Is that something?
It's something. I don't know. I think that was earlier, though. That was earlier than 2008.
Okay. Dang. Okay.
Anyway.
Well.
Can we move on from Poldo?
Yeah.
I want to talk about Thane for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, I don't mean this in the literal sense, because it's obvious, but Thane, you need a thicker skin, bud.
Oh, about... Yeah. Like, about people being scared of him?
Like, dude, come on. You have to understand your situation here, bud. Like this is how they're going to react. It would be like if you were a bear and you were just, like, really upset that everyone was scared of you all the time. It's like, yeah, literally every other bear will tear you apart. So, like, that's going to be our first response, guy. You have to account for that. You have to be like, look, I understand. I understand why you are treating me this way. Totally valid and fair. Let's talk it out. You can't just be like, right. Oh, I'm sad that my kind of hot elven lady that I was crushing on shot me with an arrow, which didn't really do damage. Like, I'm fine, by the way. I'm totally okay. Like, her response was totally reasonable, guy, and you should know that.
It'd be like if you put on your Tinder profile a picture of, like, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
And showed up and she was like, you're not Ryan Gosling. And you started crying.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you're actually, like, you're actually, like, a giant bear. You're not Ryan Gosling. You're, like, a 1,200-pound grizzly bear. And she started crying.
Right.
And you're like, well, I thought this was what all the women wanted, right?
You're a 1,200-pound grizzly bear who shows up to the date gnawing on a person's leg.
Right, correct.
Because Katha wakes up to him ripping a guy apart.
Yeah, in like a horrific way.
Yeah.
Yeah, but like, also, he now has several points of, like, he has several data points now of, like, people will initially be scared of you and try and attack you. Mm-hmm. And then you explain the situation and they're like, oh, I mean, okay, like, I'm still wary of you, but, like, we can talk. We can figure this out. Like, you've seen it already, bud. Just, you gotta just weather that little hit at the beginning.
Right. Well, this harkens back to our conversation last episode to some degree, where a lot of this, I think, is on our team of not, like, talking to him about it.
Right.
Because he is an infant, essentially, even though he's technically old.
Right. Right. Yeah. I also think, like,
can you hear Astrid barking in the background?
Yeah. Somebody's at the door. I also think that, like, I feel like this section we've had a lot of big blow-ups for secrets that people have kept from each other.
Yeah.
I don't see a problem with any of these secrets. Like, I mean, yes.
We're not in the world, though, to be fair.
Yeah. But, like, the troll thing, who cares? Like, yeah, you didn't tell me about the troll. I would have been freaked out. But also, it sounds like it was actually fine and, like, good and helping us out a lot. And, like, I get we've been busy. Okay.
The troll thing, okay. Like, first reaction, yes, I'm going to be terrified. Second reaction, hell yes.
Yeah, I'm hyped.
Okay?
I'm so hyped.
This rules.
And, like,
I'm best buddies with a, like, unstoppable force of nature.
Yeah. Yeah. And, like, a unique, what, like, this is the only troll anyone's ever encountered that they can, like, talk to and find out what their favorite ice cream is or whatever. Like, I have so many questions for you. Tell me all those songs of the birds.
I'm always trying to make buddies with dangerous animals.
Of course. Luke, notorious always for doing this. You gotta stop, bud. It's getting dangerous for you and everyone you care about. Yeah, I feel like people should be getting hype a lot sooner about this. Also, the fact that Buddy's an Omnimancer, like, that, you know the consequences of that. And I don't know, I just feel like he didn't even think of himself as an Omnimancer. Like, he, I don't know, I just feel like none of these secrets are that big a deal. They shouldn't have split up the party for these secrets. I think the secrets were an excuse and everyone is sick of each other at this point anyway, just like at the beginning of the book where they're like, god, this kind of sucks, right? And I think that this was just like an excuse for them all to just scatter.
Right. What do you think about the Geist secret where he's a shapeshifter guy,
doppelganger? I don't think it matters at all.
I think the question is, like, okay, when have you been the doppelganger the whole time I've known you? Because then it's like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if it's like, was there a Geist that you replaced?
Even so, like, if he's never spoken, I don't know. As long as he's still on your team and he's still good.
Well, but I don't know if you can believe that he's on your team.
Yeah. Okay.
If, unless he's been there the whole time.
Right. I don't think
if it's just a doppelganger who's like, I kind of like this look, this is my style nowadays.
Yeah.
Then come on, get in here. That's fine.
Yeah, bring it in. It sounds like he did take over, though, because I think, and it's been a while since we read the first book, I think Gore mentioned that he knew him before and he saw him die and that he thought that he had actually survived, but it was a doppelganger that sort of took over his identity. But I think with this party, it's been the same guy the whole time.
Yeah. And that's long enough ago.
Yeah, that's like over a year ago. He's on your team, guys. Also, how are you going to find this guy? So I know they're on a quest right now. I'm getting a little bit ahead here. They're on a quest to go bring everybody back together. They're getting the band back together. How are you going to find a doppelganger that's just out there? What do you look for? Sorry, what's the description you give people? Oh yeah, he could look like anything and anyone.
Yeah, it's tough. I don't know.
We don't know what he sounds like or any of his personality except spoken. He's quiet. He's good at chess.
I think you just have to put it out there, find a way to be like, we're getting the band back together. Put out a Craigslist ad and hope he comes to you.
Hope he comes to you. Yeah, that's my guess. The problem with that is, like, they are wanted fugitives, so you know the FBI is entering chat, right?
Right. This is true. It's going to be tough.
Mm. Mm. Anyway, my last note here. Bert finally getting a mount of patches.
Oh, the dog?
Is one of my favorite things in this book so far. Where he's just like, he just assumes that they got the dog as his mount. He's like, oh yeah, what did you think we rode? This is my mount.
I do like that the dog has no qualms with it.
Dog's into it. It seems like they are having a great time together.
Yeah.
Yeah. This duo is big for me, real big.
Always a team up. Always any dog related team up. Very, very pro.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. So, looking forward to seeing more of the Burt Patches team up. Looking forward to them saving the world.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna keep an eye out for that. Next week when we finish the book, we'll bring the hot takes
and be the dumb nerds.